Contract Properties is a homegrown, family-owned maintenance company located in Nashville. They provide HVAC, electrical, plumbing, painting, and many other services for commercial and residential properties. From build-outs to junk removal, one call does it all. Whether you're a homeowner or a property manager, give Contract Properties a call today for a free estimate. 615-356-0755. That's 615-356-0755. Or visit contractproperties.net.
Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
On 104.5 The Zone.
Happy Thanksgiving from us to you and your family. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue and Poncho and Lefty's. Locally owned, delicious Nashville-style hot pulled pork every day at their 12 South location for Edley's. You can find it at all of their locations, 12 Southeast Nashville, Sylvan Park on Fridays. 615-737-1045, our number coming up at 10:15. Greg Cosell of NFL Films. We have at 11:15, Jonnu Smith, Doug Matthews at 11:30, and then Dean Pease with our Dean of Defense. He'll tell you what adjustments must be made defensively for the Titans to have some success against the Colts offense on Sunday in Indy. Paul, we finally have the audio of Jim Harbaugh and Mike Vrabel pregame discussing the logo and the disrespect of Malcolm Butler and others.
You know how we don't care about Thanksgiving food?
Right.
That's how Mike Vrabel feels about stuff like stepping on the logo pregame and it being disrespect. What he did is, and he was funny, he was trying to avoid talking to Harbaugh directly. He was talking to, even though Harbaugh was standing over his shoulder.
Exactly how Chad described it, because I didn't see it on the TV copy.
He was talking to the official. He was telling, even though Harbaugh could hear him, Harbaugh's to his left, but he's looking at the official forward, and he's telling the official what to tell Harbaugh, which I thought is perfectly
Tell
brilliant.
Him to go coach.
Tell him to go coach. Let's not worry about all this nonsense. Tell him to go coach. Let's go play. Let's go play a big, important football game and not worry about all this dumb stuff that doesn't matter. And ultimately, and you weren't with us when we talked to Feinstein on Monday, but Feinstein said, you know, look, Harbaugh's a great lunch companion. He's a great conversationalist. He's a smart guy. But like a lot of coaches, in the heat of the battle, sometimes he'll get carried away. He probably got carried away then. And then when he says after the game it's irrelevant, well, that's true. By the end of the game, it is irrelevant. and he knows it's irrelevant, even though it was clearly relevant before the game and in the moment to him. So, look, I wrote, this is some of the foolishness of sports. You can look at that as, oh, my God, they're standing on our logo, disrespecting that. Or you could say, there are football players standing on a piece of grass. And I am so far on the there are football players standing on a piece of grass. I think a towel is a towel, and a logo painted on grass is a logo painted on grass. And if you're, you know, the disrespect thing is so overplayed, and somebody responded to me retweeting that saying, what's disrespectful is the way you play defense in the fourth quarter on a crucial drive. I agree with that. If you, it's about the football. Prove it with the football. And that's kind of what Vrabel was saying to me.
See, I view it like all week and all offseason, really. Harbaugh has been telling his group whenever he can, you're not going to let them come in and do exactly what they did to you in January. And what they did in January to start everything was exactly what they did on Sunday.
Did anybody notice it? Like Rashawn Evans said that after the game.
No.
We do this every game. We did it in January, and nobody said a word.
The Ravens noticed it. That's all that matters here from Harbaugh's perspective. I don't know this to be true, but I can totally see John Harbaugh trying to live what he's preached for the last 9 months or whatever.
I agree.
By saying, screw this. We're not going down this path again. Get to your side of the field. Like this, we're taking care of business today.
Should have had his players do it, though. He shouldn't be doing it.
Well, I agree with that, too. But I I'm just trying to figure why would he care?
Coach is going to go out there. Why
would Harbaugh care? And to me, that's why is they did this in January. They ended our 14-win season as the number one seed, and this is a massive game for us. We've lost two of their last three. They're viewing that as it's time to get back on track and get into a short week coming up against Pittsburgh. And instead, we saw what happened. Also, I think there is a portion of this that I do buy into. That was you had to fight to find some juice pregame in that building. It was totally different without fans.
I really felt it more in this game because it's a juiced rivalry.
Yeah.
Because it's a rematch of that big game.
So I think that's part of it, too. I think there's some manufactured energy with that.
I buy that. I don't know if you saw my tweet. I walked to the stadium. It's about 25 minutes from my hotel. And so I haven't been walking to stadiums. I've been driving or taking a car. But walking through the parking lot, you know, I'm walking through an empty section of the parking lot. I could see over on the other side of the parking lot is where, you know, some employees and the like are parking. And I don't know how you enter the building there generally. But you're entering on your own on this. Baltimore's got a very interesting entrance. You enter kind of right near where the players and executives
park. Yes.
So you can watch players walk right in a way that you can't in a lot of places. But I'm walking through that empty parking lot, and I stopped and I took a picture, you know, that really emphasized the emptiness of the parking lot in front of the stadium.
This is the place where fans would be throwing batteries at the team.
Yeah, well, I felt it more, right? It was a semi-gray day, and it was like a Baltimore football day. And with the consequences of the game to come, with the bigness of it, and with it really feeling like fall, almost winter, I felt it missing more. I hadn't felt it the same way in Minneapolis. I hadn't felt it the same way in Denver.
Because
it the same way for the Jacksonville game here.
Right. You know what it feels like in Baltimore, though.
Yeah, well, Paul must have really been feeling himself to having to have just binged The Wire and then decide to walk 30 minutes through Baltimore to get to the stadium. Well,
I know Baltimore reasonably well, having been there a lot. And walking along the waterfront tourist area where I was is not near the corners.
It's 2020. The corners come to you.
Paul is the McNulty of this show.
It's not, what they call it, Hamsterdam,
yeah.
It's nothing like that. Now, Wyatt told me a story. I hope I'm not breaking his confidence, where he found himself in a neighborhood he probably shouldn't have been walking in Saturday night.
Wearing a Vanderbilt shirt, I'm sure.
But he had in hand his crab cake.
Oh, coming up, Greg Cosell joins us. Time to break down what the Titans did well in Baltimore and look ahead to the matchup against the Indianapolis Colts. Greg Cosell next. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue, and they deliver to you online, edleysbbq.com. With Paul Koharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. Pleased to be joined by Greg Cosell each and every Wednesday, presented by Turner Security. When you turn to Turner Security, you can leave your security issues at the door. TurnerSecurity.us for more information. Greg, great to have you back on the show. Hope you're doing well. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the family.
Same to you guys, and believe it or not, I'm actually going to stay home tomorrow. Now, I'm going to watch tape at home because I can. I won't do that for, you know, 12, 15 hours, but I'm going to watch tape at home tomorrow, but I'm going to do it at home.
Watching film and watching ball live on the TV screen. That's what we'll normally be doing on Thanksgiving Day. So, Greg, not going into the office, which is the typical schedule for NFL films. I'm curious just your initial thoughts on the Titans win in Baltimore, but I'd like to start at the end and work our way through the game from there.
Sure.
The game-winning touchdown in overtime, the offensive line blocked the run very well. And going back and watching it, Greg, I didn't see this in live action. Henry was not touched. on that touchdown run. They didn't get a hand on him. Will you take us through the run and the blocks by the front five at various levels that led to the game-winning score?
Well, you know, it's funny you asked me about that play because I thought, and we'll get to this in a sec, I thought that the kid at left guard, Aaron Brewer, played really, really well, but that's just an aside right now. It came out of 13 personnel, that 29-yard touchdown run, which means they had one back and three tight ends. Two of the tight ends were to the strong side of the formation, which and that was Swaim and Smith. So that was the four-man surface side, as we call it. That was the strong side. So you had really good blocks by tight end Smith and Swaim, and really good blocks by Quisenberry, who obviously came in for Sambrello, and the left guard Brewer. So actually, Quisenberry kind of got off his guy a little bit, and I forget who that was exactly, but still, that particular player was not in position to really touch Derrick Henry, and then Henry cut off that back to the inside, and no one touched him. But it was a strong side run, four-man surface, outside zone, which was pretty much their foundation throughout the entire game. And it was obviously unbelievable. You know, just a couple of points unrelated to that play is the way they just stay with Henry running the football, no matter what the game situation is, just really speaks to their commitment to running the football.
How was Quisenberry overall stepping in for Sambrello, and how different might it be? There's one thing when you step in kind of and the team hasn't been preparing for you, as opposed to if the Colts are expecting to see him now as a starter.
Is that probably going to be the case?
Yeah, Sambrello's out long-term, probably for the season.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. I didn't know what the injury was. I hadn't seen anything about it. I thought Quisenberry did a nice job in this game. I mean, look, obviously he's been around and he's not been a starter, so you just don't know. But again, then you look at Aaron Brewer, the left guard, who's 6'1", 275, and you looked at him, he looked like a ninth grader, you know, in between Ben Jones is not big, but I mean, just looked like a ninth grader out there because he's small. And I thought he acquitted himself extremely well, both as a run blocker and in pass protection. I thought he played with strength and leverage. I thought he competed and battled. That really stood out. When you play in the interior of the O-line, competing and battling becomes so important. It's not all about looking pretty inside like that, particularly against the Ravens defense. And I thought Quisenberry, and I don't know the number of snaps he played at left tackle. It couldn't have been more than 20 or so, I would imagine, give or take. But I thought he played reasonably well, given the situation. We'll see now when he, you know, goes up against, has to play a complete game now.
You mentioned Aaron Brewer, Greg, and just let's dive in a bit more on him at guard, because he's the opposite of what Roger Saffold's known for, right?
Yeah.
When you think of the overall style, how much did it help Brewer that he was playing against the three-man front and not a four-man front, which he could potentially face this week in Indy if he's needed, if Saffold can't go?
Well, there were a lot of plays in which he was uncovered, and that certainly can help because he doesn't necessarily have someone right in his face. This week, he's going to get a three technique. He's going to get Buckner, and that'll be a fascinating matchup if Saffold can't go. But, you know, the larger point, and it's funny you mentioned that, Jonathan, but the larger point here is the Titans, and they do this as a matter of course, they play out of base personnel. And this was the second week in a row that the Ravens played a team that played a ton out of base personnel. And I think the Ravens played out of base personnel on over 70% of their snaps. And by that, I mean they did not have three wide receivers on the field. So they had various permutations of base personnel. They just did not have three wide receivers on the field. And what that did for the second week in a row, it put the Ravens in their base defense. And I don't think they love to play in their base defense. I don't think that's something they'd ideally like to do. And I think that, we saw that the Ravens the Titans ran the ball pretty well. I mean, obviously, when you play the Ravens and you run the ball a lot, you're going to have runs that are 1 yard, 2 yard. That happens in a run game. But as we know, the Titans stay with it. And Henry had a lot of 5 yard runs, 6 yard runs, 8 yard runs, and they just kept kept pounding away. But there were a lot of snaps in which Brewer did not have someone head up on him.
Greg Cosell with us, presented by Turner Security. The Titans' offense had been stagnant for much of that game before the final four possessions. It was 21-10, and then they had two touchdown drives and two field goal drives. In total, 36 plays, 297 yards. Yeah. So what changed? So you mentioned the base defense that Baltimore was in, and they don't want to stay in that all the time. But
no.
What changed in the final four possessions for Tennessee to where they dictated what Baltimore was doing defensively they could not do throughout the pace of that game?
Well, I think, number one, I think that's often the case with Henry. I think Henry often gets more yards as the game progresses. So that in and of itself is not abnormal. And just one other player I'd really like to mention who is totally unheralded because he's not a pass receiver, but I think Jeff Swaim has become a really important part of the Titans' base personnel run game with his ability to line up in multiple positions and be really effective as a blocker. We saw that on the Henry 24-yard run early in the fourth quarter. We saw that on the 11-yard run on the same possession where he had really good one-on-one blocks. So the yards start to pile up for Henry as the game progresses. I thought that Tannehill had some really good secondary read throws. The Davis 50-yarder was a secondary read throw because that was your classic – that was one of their staple plays where he drops back, bang, play action. He's looking for Brown. Brown was not there, and then he hits Davis, who was not the primary. And that became a 50-yarder because Marcus Peters, who's known to do this, his eyes were in the backfield, which they shouldn't have been. But Davis showed with his initial step or two that he was going to run block. So there was a big play there that produced a lot of yards. I think there was a 22-yarder later in the fourth quarter as well. Same situation. He was looking for Brown, and Davis ran an out route, and Tannehill did a great job. He moved his feet with his eyes and delivered the ball to Davis. So I thought Tannehill did a really nice job on those two plays of coming off the primary, which was that bang play action where they like to hit Brown. You know, we've seen that I don't know how many times the last 2 years. Actually, they did it on the first series against Indianapolis, 2 weeks ago. And he came off that and hit Davis for – so those two plays right there are 72 yards.
Dan Orlovsky went back over, I believe it was the final three possessions, and listed every one. And every one was every play, run or play action, except one.
Right.
It was a drop back pass. And he gave them, it was said, testament to knowing who you are and doing what you do.
Yeah, and look, I've talked about that, and I think it worked in this game. I still think you have to be careful. You know, I've talked about that with you guys before. Yeah,
independent.
And I think you do have to be careful about that. I know Dan is a big, big fan of Arthur Smith, and he's talked about it numerous times. And I'm not a fan of Arthur Smith. I just think you have to be careful. You know, Tannehill, because he did such a good job on those plays that I mentioned, you know, it worked. But I think that if everything is a run or a play action pass, and that's the only way you can play, I think you're going to run into situations where that doesn't work.
Are there specific examples of getting Tannehill into a rhythm? Because
he was bad early.
Yeah, I mean, he did not look comfortable early in the game. The interception, he had Patrick Queen, I believe, bearing down on him.
Yeah, my sense was McNichols blew that protection.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know if they've talked about that, but I think he blew that protection.
So after the interception, it just looked off. It wasn't as comfortable as what we saw, but he finishes the game completing 13 of his final 14 attempts.
Yeah.
His final seven attempts were all completion. So can you give us examples of how Arthur Smith gets him into a rhythm? Are there ways to explain what you broke down against Baltimore in past weeks as well?
Well, I think they always, by the foundation of what they do offensively with the run game and the pass game working off of it, theoretically, that always gets him into a rhythm, theoretically, because play action, quick game play action. The reads are defined. The throws are defined. I mean, when he drops back and hits A.J. Brown on those in-breakers, they're just sort of five-step slants as opposed to three-step slants. Those are essentially one-read throws. Now, is there another option? Yes, we just talked about that when he hit Davis on the 50-yarder and the 22-yarder. But those balls are meant to be thrown when you design them to whoever the in-breaker is. It's usually A.J. Brown because he's so good run after catch. So theoretically, the whole premise of their pass game is supposed to get Tannehill in rhythm. This is not a straight drop back, deep drop pass game where he has to scan the field and make difficult throws at the intermediate and deeper levels. So, you know, there are times, look, defenses know this too, by the way. So there are times it doesn't work, and then you have to have something else to go to. And we've seen that at times that can cause problems.
On the other side, they did not do a good job 2 weeks ago against Nyheim Hines.
No.
Here comes Jack Doyle back into the picture, and out goes Jayon Brown, who's done for the season. They're hoping to get David Long off the COVID list, but he's not been the player he was last year. He's seemingly been in the doghouse. Will Compton finished this game, the Baltimore game, seemingly with success. The Ravens certainly didn't attack him. Does not bring the speed and athleticism of Jayon Brown or David Long. How do you see that formula working out here? I would think advantage Colts with Hines coming off the success and Doyle in the formula.
Yeah, that's a great point because Jayon Brown is a really good player and he's an athletic player. And, you know, Compton to me is a real solid pro, one of those guys you can always line up and he's not going to hurt you, but he certainly lacks the athleticism that you'd love to see at the position. You know, and Hines has become, and he was a major factor in that first game 2 weeks ago, where I think he had 12 rushes for 70, and we've seen them expand his role in the pass game where they detach him from the formation. He's usually to the boundary. He can be in the slot to the boundary or he can be split out wide to the boundary, and he's become a major factor. So the question is, how do you deal with that? They're not a big empty team, but they've been doing a little more of that because Hines has become a bigger factor. So, PK, you're right. I mean, David Long is clearly more athletic than Compton, but he hasn't played. I guess he hasn't practiced either. So, and he's still a young player. So we'll see how they may end up going with Compton just because they know he'll be assignment sound.
There was a huge speed advantage for Indy's offense against this Titans defense this past Thursday night football game that we saw here. So, you know, we hope to see Adoree Jackson at some point. We haven't seen that yet, but it's not like you can just flip a switch and add speed defensively. So, what adjustments would you like to see the Titans make against Indianapolis' defense? Phillip Rivers did whatever he wanted in that game.
Yeah, and there were a couple of busts, I thought. That's the thing. I mean, you know, and obviously you hope that that doesn't happen again. I thought the was it the 30-yarder? I thought that not the 30-yarder. There was another long play that I thought was a bust in that game. But the 30-yarder, too, which came, I think, in the second quarter, that was an interesting play where I think the Titans got a little tied up defensively as to what they were playing and how they wanted to play that particular route concept. But there was the 40-yarder, which was on the fourth quarter TD drive. That's the play I'm remembering. That was a bust because I thought the Titans were in cover one and Pittman ran a shallow cross and Butler passed him on to no one. Mm. So to me, that was a bust. So there were a number of longer plays in that game that I thought were problematic from a defensive assignment standpoint.
Harold Landry was used in an interesting way this past week against Lamar Jackson. They were stacking him off the ball to play the dive or the pitch. And with the option game, you need another defender to overhang. And this was the game that I felt like was specific to Baltimore. But it worked well. So what are aspects of what Landry was doing? He played virtually every snap, I believe, Paul, but one or two.
98%.
Yeah, and the biggest play came on that sack in overtime right at the end of his day.
And he was in an overhang position on that play as well.
Okay, so they were deploying Landry in that way. Was there a rhyme or reason to how they were doing that specific to playing the Ravens that you see maybe week to week with teams defending Baltimore now?
Oh, For sure. You can go back the week before, and then Belichick did a specific thing. He played him outside in, Jackson, that is. He played out of dime. He played with two safeties, Adrian Phillips and Kyle Duggar, and they were essentially overhang players on each side, even a little wider than overhang players. And they counted on the Patriots, that is. They counted on their interior D linemen to win the battles inside against the Ravens interior O-linemen, which was a good move because the Ravens interior O-line is not very good. And in fact, they made a change this week going into the Titans game. So yes, Belichick played it a certain way specific to the Ravens. I think your point, Jonathan, is exactly right. I think one reason why Landry played so many snaps, why it essentially became a 4-3 stack in some ways, is to get someone off the ball to react to that run game. There's no question about it. You can't react to that run game as an on-the-ball defender. It's too hard.
So what's the one thing you think the Titans can maybe most easily adjust to out of that last Colts game, or have to adjust to in order to survive, minus the obvious special teams gaffes?
Well, I think they've got to find a way to get pressure on Rivers. We know, look, Rivers was not under pressure in that game. We spoke about that week after the game. He was under no pressure whatsoever. And we know that that's not been a strength of the Titans this year, but they're going to have to find some way to get pressure on Phillip Rivers, because say what you want about Rivers, when he has time, he knows where to go with the football, and he can make throws. The one thing that was interesting about the Colts game this week against the Packers is they started to get Jonathan Taylor back involved again. And he had 22 carries. I think he had 6 carries in a row to start the third quarter. So they obviously at halftime said, you know what, we're going to give the ball to Jonathan Taylor. And I think Taylor's a volume runner, and I think he struggled a bit. Really up to this week, where I thought he started to look more like the Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin, more decisive, more aggressive as a runner. So we'll see if he becomes more of a factor this week. He was not a factor at all in the first matchup 2 weeks ago when Nyheim Hines played the large majority of snaps at the running back position.
Greg, Indy's defense last year was good, not great. Now they're the number one defense right now in the league, and they were a couple of weeks ago too. They've been steady. So is it as simple as they added DeForest Buckner and they're the number one defense, added with the talent they have around him? Or is there more to it than that?
Well, I think there's other players who've improved dramatically. I mean, Buckner's a great player. Grover Stewart's improved dramatically. He's a really good one technique next to Buckner. And he's an overlooked player because he's not a household name. I think the second-year linebacker from Stanford, Bobby Okereke, is going to be a star. And I think he's moving in that direction. Last year, he was a rookie, just getting his feet wet, played more snaps as last season, his rookie season, progressed. But now he's close to being a full-time player. He's really a good player. So they have, in today's NFL, and you guys are speaking about this with Jayon Brown now being out, they have, when they go to their nickel, now sometimes Anthony Walker plays in their first down nickel, but the majority of nickel is Leonard and Okereke, arguably two of the most athletic nickel linebackers in the NFL, and that's critical in today's NFL. I think they've got really, really good play from the safety position from two guys who not a lot of people know about, Willis, who's a second-year player from Michigan State, and Julian Blackman, who's a rookie from, I believe, Utah State, I forget. But they've gotten tremendous play from both those guys. So it's not just Buckner, Jonathan. They have young players who are getting better and rookies like Blackman who have really stepped in and done a good job.
Paul, Greg mentioned trying to find that pass rush against Phillip Rivers. I wonder if we see more of Rashawn Evans. We've seen more of him in the pass rush recently and in recent weeks, but I wonder if we see more of a steady dose of that. Different defensive concept against Lamar Jackson, Greg, than what we would see against Indy, but I wonder if they can't use him more, or does the injury by Jayon Brown affect how they can now deploy Rashawn Evans at middle linebacker?
Well, that's going to be the interesting question. If they see Evans as, in a sense, replacing Brown. And we won't know the answer to that,
right,
obviously. But I remember Evans had a really good pass rush. It was in the high red zone. It was 3rd and 7 early in the second quarter, and he beat the left guard Bozeman, his former Alabama teammate. And he had a great pass rush, showed his speed, lateral quickness. So he can be, in my view, a really good pass rusher. The question is, how do they feel about Compton and how do they feel about David Long?
Yeah, it's hard to get him out to the edge, even when they're fully stocked inside. I think it's even harder to imagine them doing that now, minus Brown.
Greg, on the way out, I want to get a couple of quarterback assessments from you. P.J. Walker in Carolina.
Yeah, I didn't get, you know, I didn't get to see him yet because it's a short week for us. It's a shooting matchup earlier in the week, so I did not get to see him yet.
How about Taysom Hill in New Orleans?
I did watch Taysom Hill, though, because I knew that he'd be a guy, because they have the best record in the AFC, so I knew he's a guy that I'd be asked about, and I did watch him. And again, to me, that's a great example of understanding your quarterback and coaching, because Sean Payton's one of the best. So you saw a lot of play action boot, define the reads and throws, a lot of half field reads, which is the right thing to do. They did an excellent job with motion, which also impacted the defense and set up the route concept. So I thought they did, Sean Payton did a really good job with Taysom Hill, setting him up to be as effective as he could be. And we know he's got the running element to his game. They ran gap scheme runs a ton in that game with him.
No, I asked you if there was a switch that was flipped for the Indy defense. Can you point to anything specifically with Gruden and Carr in Vegas as to why the production level and the play calling is so much more productive now, seemingly, than maybe at this time last year?
Well, I think it becomes a case, too, of familiarity in what Gruden wants to do, and that Carr is just much more comfortable with it. You know, to me, at his core, what Gruden wants to do is a little bit old school. What Gruden wants to do is play power football, line up, run the ball. He does that a lot with multiple tight ends. And then off of that, be able to drive the ball down the field. Now, obviously, you're not throwing it deep all the time, but to be able to create those explosive plays off the fact that you can play physical power football with your multiple tight ends. And the other part of that, which is critical, and I actually had this conversation with John Gruden years ago, he talked about the most important thing in his style of offense for the quarterback is completions. So he also wants short passes. He wants the quarterback to have a high completion percentage. He wants completions to be the number one element in the pass game.
Carr's looking really good right now.
Yep. Greg Cosell of NFL Films with us, presented each week by Turner Security. When you turn to Turner Security, you can leave your security issues at the door. TurnerSecurity.us is the website. Greg, happy Thanksgiving to you. Enjoy the football. Thankful that you join us each and every week here on The Zone.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great holiday. Thanks so much.
He is Greg Cosell. Follow him on Twitter, at Greg Cosell. Stay tuned. More coming. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue with Paul Kuharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Chad Withrow with a well-deserved day off leading into the long weekend. Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. And we were thinking, you know, today would be a great day for a truth according to Kirby. If Kirby Allen Kirby had a great Thanksgiving truth that he could tell that we haven't heard yet. And, Paul, wouldn't you know it, Kirby Allen Kirby, he comes through. He delivers, just like Edley's. And so does Coach Mack, who will not join us tomorrow because of the Thanksgiving holiday, but we wanted to have him on just to simply say happy Thanksgiving. Mack, how are you?
Guys, thanks for calling. Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah, I'm glad to jump on here. When you told me what was getting ready to happen, I mean, I've got a turkey in the oven, but it can wait.
I sent Mac a text during the last segment. I said, hey, truth according to Kirby, in 10 minutes, are you in? He said, yes, absolutely. And whenever Coach Mac is with us, it's always presented by Farm Bureau Health Plan. So this truth according to Kirby, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, protecting Tennesseans since 1947, online at FBHP.com.
Kirby has no sponsor.
Kirby, happy go ahead, Mac.
I know the Farm Bureau Health Plan is really proud to be sponsoring Truth According to Kirby. I know they are.
Absolutely.
Randy Wilmore will be more than happy to do that.
He's going
to
call in and cancel right after this.
Kirby, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Happy Thanksgiving to Chutton, TK, and Coach. Hope you guys, all four of you, have a fantastic holiday.
Well, let's kick it off with, let's make it official. It is time for the truth, according to Kirby.
And now, it's time for Nashville's most honest game show. It's the truth, according to Kirby.
Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies.
Two of these statements are lies. The other, the truth. Maybe.
U.S. Olympics 1980, the game was televised 4 days after the event.
And here's your host, Bob Barker's nephew himself, according to Kirby.
That's not true!
It's John Hutton.
You can't handle the truth.
Thank you, Davis Reed, and no Chad today, Paul, so you can bounce ideas off of Coach Mack for this very special Thanksgiving edition. Thanksgiving 1981, or well, hell. He made plans to travel north so Kirby could spend the holiday with family. Everything changed when his boss failed to complete payroll on time, causing Kirby to miss his flight.
Oh, he's flying. That's big.
His boss's response was to drive the young lad to his grandmother's house.
Oh.
Seems simple enough. He would drop Kirby off, spend the holiday with his folks in Cincinnati, and then return Saturday for the trip back to Tennessee. If only life were that easy for Kirby, because you see, after spending most of the drive with a gin and tonic in his hand, he completely forgot that he had brought a passenger with him to Ohio. Now what? How did young Kirby get back to the land of Dixie? Did he hitch a ride with a trucker friend of his dad's heading to Atlanta with a truckload of sheep? Did he spend 11 hours on a bus sitting next to a prostitute heading to a warmer climate for the season? Or did he hitchhike to Columbus, catch the last flight out, only to endure a six-hour delay in Pittsburgh due to an ice storm? How did Kirby get back to Tennessee after his drunk boss forgot that he was on the trip with him to Ohio?
So I'm a little confused about what happened with the drunk boss. He just never returned?
Kirby, he just forgot you?
Well, after messing up payroll, he assured me that, you know, he was from Cincinnati, that he would get me to my destination. He drove me to Bucyrus, Ohio, that 8-hour drive that I ended up commandeering the car short of Columbus and just saying, hey, dude, I'm taking the wheel. I've had enough of this. So we get to my grandmother's, and I introduce him to everyone, and we're obviously tired. She thinks he's sleepy, and so he takes a nap in the guest room.
He was sleeping.
My uncle and I go over to see my dad and tell my grandmother, hey, we'll be back in about an hour and a half. We get back 2 hours later, and Bob is gone. And she says, oh, he woke up and said thank you and left. And he's gone to Cincinnati to visit his folks. Well, come Saturday, when he hadn't shown up by noon, I called the number I had for him. There's his mom's, and she answers. And I said, hey, has he left yet to come up and pick me up? And she goes, well, who is this? And I explained to her, and she says, oh, well, Robert left this morning early. My thoughts were at that time, well, okay, he's due any minute, you know. So as it approaches dark, still no Bob. So I call the Cookeville store and get one of my other roommates who explains that, oh, he's been back in Cookeville for 2 hours and then he's passed out. And so
again,
I'm kind of dumbfounded. So my uncle and I start scrambling on, okay, how do I get, I've got to be back. I've got to work on Monday. How do I get back to Cookeville?
Okay.
So this is the story. How did Kirby get back to
Cookeville?
Well, this seems somewhat natural. One of those is the actual solution.
This seems somewhat natural that he was planning to fly and he missed his flight. So then you would just take the return flight, and this wouldn't be that complicated. I think that there would be a conversation with Bob about this. Bob, thanks for the ride to Columbus. I had to finish it up because you're
drunkard. Right.
And I'll catch my return flight, and everything will be fine. Why would have to hitchhike to Columbus? From where, Kirby? What's the town?
Bucyrus. It's about an hour and a half north of Columbus.
Bucyrus. I mean, couldn't...
Hour and a half.
Couldn't one of your relatives have given you a lift? I guess they were doing their
own drinking. Might be the hitchhiking part, I imagine.
Did he hitchhike a ride with a trucker friend of his dad's heading to Atlanta with a truckload of sheep? Did he spend 11 hours on a bus sitting next to a prostitute heading to a warmer climate for the season? Or did he hitchhike to Columbus, catch the last flight out only to endure a six-hour delay in Pittsburgh due to an ice storm?
The regular answer would be that his family drove him to the Columbus airport where he took his return flight. Dave McGinnis, your thinking on this.
Well, Paul, first of all, there's no regular answer with Kirby.
Right.
And so anything that would happen within natural for a natural human being, that would be it. So that's clearly not it. To me, I'm thinking he got on the bus and quickly struck up a friendship and a conversation with a prostitute.
And to be honest, I'm thinking that as well. But I just want for everyone out there to know all of this is a lie. Payroll was in on time. Kirby, he didn't take a flight because he couldn't afford a flight. He drove. The payroll that he got is small. He used it to buy gas and tape up his fender, and he drove to Columbus or Osiris or whatever the hell it is. But I'm going with the 11-hour bus ride with the prostitute, and I'm looking forward to the description of the prostitute. That's my final answer.
Kirby, today's truth, please.
Oh, Coach, you nailed it.
Did you say you nailed her?
Oh, you did. You both. Listen, here's what happened. Because of the payroll, I never purchased the plane ticket, so I missed the opportunity. At the time, like American, they had these really cheap flights because we were the national hub. Anyway, I ended up buying a Trailways. Oh, and it gets way better. I mean, this is actually the forward story part toward the end. Anyway, I'll make this fairly quick. I end up buying a Trailways bus ticket. I leave on Sunday morning out of Osiris, Ohio. I meet the bus on the city square. I spend 11 hours on this bus, about some small town north of Columbus. This woman gets on, and the only other empty seat on the bus is next to a big dude smoking a pipe about four rows up, and then me. And she says, "May I sit here?" And I'm like, "Certainly." So she says, "Do you mind if I sit next to the window?" So I give her the seat that I'm in, and I sit in the aisle seat. Well, about 15 minutes later, she strikes up a conversation for me. She's a brunette, about 5'2". She wasn't real old, probably 30, with a low cut top. And so things are on display. And as I'm talking to her, she catches me glimpsing a tattoo on her right breast. And so she's a little small tattoo of a little heart with like a dagger stuck in it. And she says, "You want to see it?" And she pulls the entire thing out of her shirt and shows it to me. At which point she says, "I have another." And then she pulls her left out and shows that to me. I'm in shock. I'm 18 years old, and I am in shock. I mean, I'm admiring what I'm looking at, but I am in shock. Turns out she explains throughout the layover in Cincinnati and then Louisville, et cetera, that she is working the circuit and that she's heading south to the Dallas-Fort Worth area for a warmer climate for the season. In Cincinnati,
like a bird migrating.
She offers me a special deal in Cincinnati, but I didn't have any money. I'm curious about this. And so I decline. Anyway, after 11 hours, we make it to Nashville. I get off the bus, and I am expecting to see the exact same individual who forgot that he drove me to Ohio there to pick me up, as was our agreement, and he's not there. And so I immediately call Cookville.
Never mind that. What was the pricing?
Yeah, what was she charging?
What was she charging?
Yeah, you said you didn't have
the
funds.
She never did offer a dollar amount. She just says, "Hey, if you want to help, if you want to pass the next hour and not be bored sitting in the lobby, I can make that happen." I just said, "Not good."
Happy Thanksgiving, Kirby.
I'm good.
Amazing.
But when the guy showed up to pick me up at the bus, he had parked. He was also drunk, and he parked in the wrong spot. He parked where the buses should have parked and was bouncing off lockers on his way to me. I literally hooked his elbow, whipped him around, got him to his car, and got the hell out of Nashville as quickly as possible, driving back to Cookeville.
Kirby.
And eventually made it home safe.
This is a great story.
You never disappoint.
Everybody just remember that it's all lies.
No. Mac, your final thoughts.
I mean, this may be one of the best starts to Thanksgiving ever. I mean,
we can all be thankful for our honesty.
That's right.
You know how everybody gathers around the family table and everybody tells a story of what they're thankful for every Thanksgiving? This right here, this may be one of my stories from now on forever.
Kirby, in 1981, spent 11 hours on a bus with a prostitute.
Could have been the flower, but passed.
Happy Thanksgiving to both of you. Thank you for the time. Kirby, excellent work conjuring up this old memory.
Yeah. Writing this piece of fiction.
I've shared it with family a couple of times. They've had some laughs, and until you mentioned the Thanksgiving thing, it was buried in the archives.
Good job.
Hey,
guys, tremendous job. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Kirby, thanks, man. See you guys.
Thankful for both of you guys. Thank you, Kirby. Thank you, Coach.
Hey, Reed, you guys all have a good one. You guys, PK, Hutton, Chad, wherever you are, happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Kirby. You and Laura have a great day, and we'll chat soon. Kirby Allen Kirby, the gift that keeps on giving, as well as Coach Mack. All of that presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, protecting Tennesseans since 1947. Coach Mack's visits. You'll be able to hear him later this afternoon on 3HL. You can hear Mike Vrabel next, midday on 80, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.